Hello, Lagos. Welcome back again to Borderlines, the show where we go beyond borders. Now, I have with me a special guest. We're going to be talking about ECOWAS. As you know, earlier this week, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso released a statement saying that they were leaving ECOWAS. My special guest is Associate Professor FMN Ubi, who is the Director of Research and Studies, Nigerian Institute of International Affairs. Welcome, Prof.
Thank you very much for having me.
How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us in the studio. Yeah? Because I know what traffic is like out there. So we're going to be talking ECOWAS. Before we go there, when you heard the news that Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali were leaving, what were your first thoughts?
Thank you for the question. My first thought, I don't think I have any particular thought, you know. But the most important thing is that I was actually expecting this to happen, you know, based on what happened last year, you know, when the military took over in Niger, and the way the Economic Community of West African State handled the scenario and all that transpired between ECOWAS and the junta in Niger. So, specifically what really went wrong was the proposed military intervention, you know, where ECOWAS proposed to intervene militarily.
We're gonna talk about that. So you weren't surprised?
No, I wasn't surprised.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Well, okay. So let's go back to the history of ECOWAS, formed in 1975 as an economic union. And this was a union that was actually formed by heads of states, most of which were military, right?
Yes.
That's what most people don't remember.
Yeah.
It was formed for that. Right. It was also... Go ahead.
No, I said right. Yes.
Yeah. It was also formed to promote economic integration, you know, peacekeeping, economic growth, as African countries began to get independence, etc., etc. Would you say ECOWAS has served its purpose since then? Or should we even go back to that time? The old ECOWAS, was it strong back then?
ECOWAS has always been strong, right from inception, when it was formed in 1975, and the purpose for which ECOWAS was established or created, you know, like you rightly say, it was for the sole purpose of economic integration and, you know, in politics, you know, international relations. When you talk about multilateral institutions that is supposed to engender integration, the integration is not just only economic integration, but, you know, transcendentally, there is supposed to move from economic integration to political integration, which means that, so the processes must be followed, you know. But much more importantly, it was an integration to give impetus, to engender Africa's development, West African development, economic development, or economic growth and development. And so I don't think ECOWAS lost its purpose, and the provisions for which it was established there, you know, has always remained. But, you know, what has happened over the years is that transcendentally, the new governments, you know, new presidents, you know, or new later took over seat of leadership in their countries were able to progressively, you know, design and restructure ECOWAS in such a way that it will meet up with the extant contemporary challenges that we are having. For instance, at inception, ECOWAS wasn't purposefully created for peacekeeping, you know, but because of the existence in the crisis that erupted in Liberia and in Sierra Leone, ECOMOC was formed, you know, and that was how ECOWAS now, the multilateral institution now became, created an arm for peace mission within West Africa.
Look, Lagos, let me just read out the number, 0700-993-993-993. The female line is 0201-465-7190. You can send your WhatsApp to 0809-597-5805. Our website is nigeriainfo.fm. Facebook and YouTube is Nigeria Info 99.3. We are streaming live. And on Twitter, formerly or X, formerly Twitter, Nigeria Info FM, Instagram and Threads, where Nigeria Info FM Lagos. Let's talk about the original. You said it wasn't originally created for peacekeeping. So let's go back to what it was originally created for. An economic union, yeah. Right? Yeah. It was supposed to aid trade between the countries. Yeah. But how much trade do we actually do within West Africa or with each other in West Africa? How much trade does Nigeria do with Ghana? Do we do with Benin Republic? Indeed, how much trade do we do with Mali or Burkina for that matter?
We do a whole lot of trade. There's trade ongoing between the countries in the region. And but what you should really consider is the fact that what kind of trade, you know, it's going on.
Okay.
In terms of the goods that are being traded with each other, part of the problem, you know, with African trade is the fact that Africa is a non-industrialized continent. Many countries in Africa are not industrialized. Manufacturing is not there. Even if there's manufacturing, most times you have cottage industries, and most times what is manufactured are not high-tech goods, you know. And so basically what transmits, you know, between the countries is mostly commodities. But again, I think we have to take into consideration the fact that, you know, it's a huge market, you know, because of Nigerian population and because of Nigerian market. For instance, Nigeria is 3/4 of ECOWAS market, and Nigeria is one.
And that was going to be my question, yeah. Is that what is Nigeria gaining? Everybody is able to gain from us because we're the largest economy in West Africa. We've also got the largest population. So yeah. What are we gaining?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for.
Okay.
The gains you're looking for, you know. These are the kind of questions a lot of these persons ask when it has to do with Nigeria's foreign policy. What has Nigeria gained from its foreign policy? You know, people have argued that Nigeria's foreign policy has been altruistic, but that is not the case, you know. Even if we are not gaining maximally, but we gain to a considerable extent. For instance, our trade with these countries, you know, I bet you, for instance, let's take, for instance, when the border was closed.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it hurts other countries within the region and
yeah.
Why they were begging. You know, meetings held, most of the president had to visit, you know, to ask for a little bit of, you know, relief, you know,
yes,
for the borders
yes.
to be open. So
yes.
You see, that means there is a whole lot of trade going on, especially within West Africa.
Yeah, but that's for them.
For them.
Not for us.
We are also trading. If you go to different parts of West Africa,
yeah.
You see a whole lot of Nigeria. The Nigerian population is huge in West Africa.
Mm.
You know, when you go to Benin Republic, you go to Togo, you go to Ghana, you should be between Togo and Ghana, there are flower border. You see a whole lot of Nigerians there, you know, exporting. You see, sometimes, you know, because these data, you know, are not visible, you know, in most cases people don't understand the nature of trade. And then we shouldn't even look at just the trade. We should also look at in terms of the movement of persons, goods and services, you know.
Well, I was going to come to that.
Across the border, which is the whole essence for which the multilateral institution ECOWAS was created, you know, to bring West Africa together. You know, it's a supernatural organization, you know, because it's a transcendental shift to a situation where we have one currency, one central bank, one parliament,
but we don't.
And all that.
But we don't. That is the thing. Do we have... So we've got ECOWAS passports. right?
Yeah.
Which we're able to use
yes.
to travel
sure.
across. Mm-hmm. However, if I'm doing trade, for instance, with Ghana,
mm-hmm.
I still have to change my money to dollars
yeah.
before changing it to CDs.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we're both part of ECOWAS.
Mm-hmm.
One of the plans for ECOWAS was the single currency.
ECO.
What happened? Yeah, what happened to that ECO?
Well, you know,
Africa happened.
A lot of politics, you know, and don't forget that the region itself is made up of two. We're colonized by two different. European countries, you
Francophone,
know, Francophone and Anglophone,
mm-hmm.
and so this has also created problems. And you know the role that French plays in West Africa.
We're going to be very, talking about
it's
that.
It's very, very, very thick. You know,
we are going to be
very
talking
huge.
About
you know,
that.
And
yes.
the French is in such a way that it tends to want to control its former colonies. You know, when you compare our relationship with Britain, you know, Nigeria's relationship with Britain, Ghana relationship with Britain.
Like I said, I'm going to come to
so
that.
All
yeah.
that you know, play a whole lot of role. For instance, when we had agreed that we were going to launch the ECO, they went behind, you know, with the French, you know, and created their own monetary. ECO, actually.
Oh, yes, they have another point.
Yeah, from CFA to ECO and all that. So it's like they hurriedly, you know, launched it, you know, before the community should have would have done that, you know. And so that created a problem. So I think, you know, in terms of... what we are supposed to gain, what should be the benefit of ECOWAS? You know, a lot of hiccups are, you know, being played. But you see, these hiccups might also not be just from the nations within the community, but it could also be the interplay of external powers, you know, the superpower rivalry within Africa and within West Africa. And don't forget, West Africa is rich. Extremely very rich with resources.
Well, we'll talk about that richness, because what's the point of rich if you're not able to actually spend it well and your people are able to benefit? Your people are able to benefit from it. So currently Nigeria is, you know, President Tinubu is the president of ECOWAS, right?
Yes, yes.
When he became president of Nigeria, he also became president.
Yeah.
So ECOWAS is under Nigeria's leadership right now.
Sure.
As you rightly said, a year ago, coup after coup after coup. President Tinubu, or should I say ECOWAS, then, you know, said there's a red line. If you don't install him by August 9th or whatever it was, we're going to come at you. Not a lot happened. Okay?
Yeah.
Would you say ECOWAS is suffering under this current leadership?
I wouldn't say that.
Why not?
Because even if the Nigerian president is... the leader of ECOWAS right now,
yeah,
is the chairman of ECOWAS right
mm-hmm,
now,
mm-hmm.
does not mean that he takes decision as President Bola Ahmed Tinubu.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not mean that he takes decision as Nigeria.
Okay.
It's a community decision, you know, which must be debated and decisions reached and be taken. So, you know, I've said this, you know, some few days ago, that I think right now we should be looking at individual countries. We shouldn't be looking at the leadership of ECOWAS, you know, because even if he decides otherwise, the community will say no. You know, he's just a primus inter pares, you know, first among equals, you know. He happens to be there. So I think it's high time we begin to understand how international politics work and how, you know, even within the multilateral institutions, or say, supranational institutions, how politics work there. You know, for instance, let's take example of what happened last year, you know. When ECOWAS decided to intervene, the Nigerian populace said no. And the National Assembly refused. So, you see how it works. So,
even if we can't go to war unless the National Assembly permits it.
And
right?
If the people say yes.
Yeah, the people have to say yes. So, we can't go to war without that. However, the fact still remains that the current leadership of ECOWAS is Nigeria. President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, and this is the time when 15 became 12.
Yes.
So you've got to look at the leadership, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yes, it might be a collective decision.
But also don't forget,
mm-hmm.
the reason why 15 became 12. And also don't forget the reason why 16 became 15.
Mm.
You know, you see, it's something that we need to ponder over, you know, seriously.
Mm.
When ECOWAS was formed in 1975, or established in 1975, that was in the 20th century. The 21st century has come with its own problem, huge problem, challenges, you know. And so what is going on right now in the 21st century, it's adaptive. Everybody, every nation must adapt to the situation. For instance, we never had issues of terrorism, you know, in the last century, 20th century, you know, nothing like that. But right now we have terrorism, insurgency, militancy across, you know, Africa, across the globe, you know. And so decisions, when it comes to issues of security, fighting insecurity, it's not a one nation thing. It's supposed to be collective, you know. No one nation can fight terrorism.
Well, of course. Yes. I mean, and Nigeria has often led.
Now if you drift back, take it back to the crisis, you know, we are facing in terms of liberal democracy, you know, which is causing part of this problem. You know, don't forget that even in the 70s, in the 80s, and early 90s, we still had military purchases across Africa.
Yeah.
You know, but you see, because of the incessant coups in Africa, now the AU and the Economic Community of West African States came up with a new framework, zero tolerance for military coups, you know. And in any case,
the zero tolerance didn't last very long, did it? I mean, let's look at it. The 2020s, we had two coups in Mali, one in Guinea, two in Burkina Faso, and the last one being Niger. Mm. So it didn't do very well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about those French nations, or should I say the former French colonies.
Okay.
I watched an interview with head of state, President Ibrahim Traoré of Burkina Faso,
yeah,
where he said, the interviewer said to him, is there a possible way to negotiate with ECOWAS to come back? One of the things he said is, ECOWAS was not serving them. That's number one. Number two, he also said, we will never be subjugated again. Number three, he said, this decision is final. That is, there's no coming back. Was ECOWAS too Anglophone? Could that have been a problem?
No.
Okay.
I would have even said ECOWAS was too Francophone.
Okay, anyway, possibly. I'm asking.
But
yeah, go ahead.
I think, first, look at the reason he raised.
Mm.
We will never be subjugated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Invariably, not just Burkina Faso, not just Mali, not just Niger, every country in Africa has remained subjugated, subordinated, underrated. Now, I think what we also have to look at is the fact that this country are reacting to the extant status quo. Now, let's take us back to the 2020, you know, when COVID-19 ravaged the international system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you listen to the speeches of all the president at the United Nations General Assembly, you know, all the UNGAs from 2020, every president from the developing world is saying one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that? Multilateralism.
Mm.
What multilateralism? They're talking about equity. They're talking about equality. They're talking about parity within the international system.
Yeah.
They are also talking about the fact that the globe should be reordered, reconfigured, you know, to take into consideration a new economic order, which has always been the cry of the developers right from the 70s.
So are you
now,
saying,
and
okay,
recently, you know, last year, there was a financial pact meeting, you know, global financial pact meeting that was held by France, you know. Now, so one of those reasons, when he said, we don't want to remain subjugated, it's part of the whole thing. You know, now the question you should also ask yourself is, why after 60 years, no African nation is developed?
But this is no. part of what he said. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes, so
we're having this conversation.
So that means the superpowers are also playing a critical role in making sure.
Oh, we're going to talk about those foreign superpowers. Definitely.
Now, you see, his reaction is not just ECOWAS that brought their reaction. The coup itself, in the first place, was to fight against subjugation.
Bear with me.
From the external powers.
Okay. We're going to talk about those external powers, okay. But you know what they say. Let's put a mirror on ourselves first before we start talking about those people on the other side. You know those people. Lagos, I'm coming. Nigeria, I'm coming to the calls right now. Remember, name where you're calling from and question. Name where you're calling from and question. Okay? Hello? Hello. Okay. You'll have to call back. I have a message here on WhatsApp. The small successes made by ECOWAS earlier have long been eroded by a very dangerously greedy set of leaders across the region. Nigeria has not shown a good example of the giant it's supposed to be in the region. Let's not bother ourselves talking of ECOWAS with ordinary malaria when we have cancer ravaging us so badly. That's from Stephen Ijaniki. What do you make of that? Would you like, because you know, my people, they're going to start bombarding you with questions. Kindly pass that, so you're going to need to write some down. What, here you go. What would you say to Stephen Ijaniki from what he said? He's basically saying, look, Nigeria has not been a good example. All the previous gains of ECOWAS, it's all gone.
Which country in Africa is a good example?
Well, you see, we then juxtapose ourselves against?
No, what I'm saying is,
we're supposed to be the brother.
But anyway,
of the
ogre. Wait, let me just come. Uh-huh. In terms of democracy, this is since we moved back into liberal democracy in 1999. We have been consistent.
Yes, we have.
Irrespective of the odds.
Yes.
And that is why our president, over the years, have been able to stand tall when it comes to the propagation of democracy within the region. For instance, Satuma Principe had a coup. The president went there and restored democracy. Same thing with Gambia. Our president went there and restored democracy. So in that sense, we have done noble, you know. But when it comes to economy, every country in Africa has been ravaged with
bad leadership.
Bad economy. The economy has been weak. Let me explain something.
But the economy is not just weak by itself.
Can I explain something to you? Please, this is very important.
Go ahead, sir.
In the last 1.5 decade, Africa was growing. There was a whole discourse about African economic rise. You know, even Time magazine talking about African rising and all that. Now, what was giving birth to this African economic rise? It was commodity trade. One. And then the second point was the fact that we had leverage as a result of the emerging powers, emerging economies that will come. So we had options to sell our commodity. You know, now the moment the commodity price scotch, you know, I mean, once the commodity price collapsed in the international market, every country ran into recession around 2014. In East Africa, they were all under recession. Nigeria also ran into recession. Even South Africa.
What I'm trying to say, in answer to Steve, you see, we
should give ourselves some form of credibility.
Okay.
You know, we don't always, as Nigerians, undermine the country. You know, I have stated this in another fora. You know, I said if we spend, you see, Nigerians, we spend 95% criticizing Nigeria, criticizing the government,
indeed,
and spend only 5% looking for solution. But if the reverse is the case, we spend 5% criticizing and 95% looking for solution, we won't be here. Okay. After all, one American president say, don't always say, what can your country do for you, but what can you do for your country?
Okay, I'm coming to your calls now. Hello.
Yeah, Chief Minister, Reti Bakari.
Chief Minister, good afternoon. Your question, please.
Guest, good evening.
I agree to you respectfully.
You see, for me, I think you are giving soft land. Because when this Niger incident happened, what the Dekoba chairman said. He said he give them 7 days to return back to the status quo, that is the civilian regime, right?
Yes.
He said it. Is that
so? What's your question?
Dekoba people take that decision.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Hello?
The ultimatum was given by ECOWAS.
Okay, I'm going to get you to write that down so we can take as many as possible. Hello?
Reti Bakare Yusuf.
Yes. Good afternoon.
I agree with the professor there.
Yes.
I agree too.
First of all, indeed, disagree with the professor. ECOWAS, by, you know, focus now, and even Africa by...
I need you to speak up a little bit more, please.
Okay, thank you. Is it better now?
Better, much better.
Yes. I said Africa as a focus now, and even by extension, the whole of Africa, ECOWAS as a focus, and the whole of Africa as an extension, has not really done well.
Good.
First of all, the essence of our independence has been defeated.
Okay, so your point. The lines are going crazy.
Yeah, I understand. He's a professor, he's a lecturer, that's what I'm just...
Okay, so, yeah. You know, this is borderlines. Question.
So the truth is this. Okay, now coming to Africa, there is inequality in Africa. Africa's president, Alassane Ouattara, changed his own constitution. Nothing happened to him. Alpha Conde, Guinean president, changed his own. Nothing happened to him. Even when the...
So what is your question? The lines are going, please.
The question is that ECOWAS does not have that power to do what they are doing to these three countries because they are not equitable.
Okay.
They are not equitable. Why are you changing the rule of the game when it comes to these three other people? And forget, sorry, sir. 1999, when Yar'Adua was still alive, there was a similar incident in Niger. Yar'Adua restored the other president there without any wahala. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Perhaps you got the question there, but I'll give me a second. Let me go to the call. Hello?
Good evening.
Good evening. What's your name and where you calling from, please?
My name is Valentine.
Valentine, where you calling from?
From Aja.
Okay, Valentine, with your question, go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. We want to know the three countries that pulled out of ECOWAS.
Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger.
Okay. Morocco was the 16th one.
No, Mauritania.
When Morocco pulled out,
yeah,
nothing happened.
Mauritania.
Okay, Mauritania pulled out. Mm. Okay, so I think Morocco was trying to come back.
No, but your question, please. Your question, please.
My question is this: when those three countries pull out of ECOWAS, Nigeria is still carrying 60% of their budget. So what are we going to do about it?
Okay. I don't know what it means by Nigeria is carrying 60%, but I'll answer the last call and then I'll give you some time to respond to that, Prof. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, my name is Uche.
Okay, go ahead, Uche. Where are you calling from, please?
I'm calling from Lekki at the moment.
Okay, go ahead, Uche. What's your question, please?
My question is, those three people threatening to withdraw.
They have withdrawn. They have withdrawn.
Yes. Okay, what effect is it going to have? And
okay,
secondly,
good question.
Is it going to affect our trading?
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. That's a very good question because it was one of the ones that I had for you. With those three countries leaving, what effect does it have on ECOWAS? And really, is it going to affect? Are we really doing enough trade with them for it to actually affect us as a country, Nigeria being us? Over to you, Prof.
I'll start from the last question.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. So what effect would the three countries leaving ECOWAS have on...
on ECOWAS and us.
And the region, generally,
Nigeria.
Yeah, the
region, yeah.
Economically, we'll be impacted.
Okay.
Politically, we'll be impacted.
Okay.
Now, ECOWAS is made up of... The existing ECOWAS, prior to when they left, is made up of 15 countries. Now, 3 is gone. We have 12 countries.
Mm.
Because we are going to avoid a lot of negative impacts on the region, we need to negotiate with them to come back.
But they've said they're not coming back.
Well, you see...
you think there's still hope?
There's hope because... Okay. Let me explain why I say there's hope. You know, leaving ECOWAS was a reaction. Mm. It was anger. It was frustration. Now, it's like a payback. you know, what they have done. For instance, let's take the fact that there was supposed to be a meeting, you know, with ECOWAS member states in Niger, Niamey. No country appeared apart from one country, Togo. And it was that night they also decided to come up with the position that they're no more part of ECOWAS.
Because it was disrespectful, let's be honest.
No, but Nigerians gave a reason why they were not able to go. You know, the Sahel is the hottest spot of insecurity globally today.
Yes. Thanks to America. Keep going.
Niger has been part of the MT multinational joint task force, you know, helping us to... we consistently we've been fighting terrorism, insurgency, and militancy.
To help us keep them at bay.
To keep them at bay. Now, Niger is not part of ECOWAS. So that is going to affect the bloc, you know, the military groupings, you know, fighting terrorism. And so, you see, we need them. Now, with these three countries are actually at the heart of the Sahel. When you look at the bed, the Sahel bed, they are the heart of the Sahel. Now, if they are out, they can say to your tent, "Oh Israel," which is not what we want right now. And that is why what we have been putting forward, you know, in terms of advice and recommendations is that we should tread carefully. This is not time to lay blame on anybody. It's a time to negotiate with these countries, discuss with them, which is the first thing ECOWAS should have done in the first place, instead of threatening military intervention, because it's a sovereign nation.
Exactly. I mean, that's what most people felt, that they should have.
But I'm happy that the military intervention never took place.
Yes.
But because there's a protocol, you know, and in terms of a framework for zero tolerance, you know, they have to do what they have to do. ECOWAS have to do what they have to do.
Yeah.
Now, one of the Colin, you know, one of the persons that Colin talked about, that he talked about a sit-tight presidency, you know, executive presidents who are sit-tight.
I haven't got much time. We still haven't talked about the French.
Now, precisely, you see, this is part of the problem of liberal democracy.
Okay, let me come back to the French then.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like you rightly said, one of the reasons why the coup took place primarily, actually, was a kickback at the French. And Niger, Mali, they're all kicking the French out. One of the things that President Traoré said is that, look, in Burkina Faso, the French embassy is there, the EU embassy is there, etc., that they can continue. But that their relationship is going to be different. Now, we're no longer going to be ruled by them. I'm paraphrasing now. The question was put to him with regards to Russia. And he said, here's the difference. Russia gives us equipment and they don't put any restrictions on the type of equipment you can have. France gives us equipment and they say you can only have a certain type of equipment. So effectively, it feels like they've now gotten their independence back. Given that 78% of all the 27 coups that has happened in the region since the 2020s has been in French francophone countries, what is the French doing wrong?
Like I said earlier, the superpowers keep dominating. And they decide.
Yeah, but we call them super. Why can't we call them the French?
It's not only the French.
Yeah, but we're talking about this region that is the French.
It's across board. You know, if French is subordinating, in quote, you know, the French colonies, their former colonies, others too are doing it.
Yes, but let's focus on this. Them. Yeah.
Now, you see, as of this moment, one would have thought that would have gone beyond where we are today. But we've not been able to move beyond. The French countries have not been able to move beyond, you know, where they are. It has been consistent. Lack of economic development, lack of economic growth.
And that's part of what he was saying.
That's part of what he was saying. And in terms of international economic management, you know, the French has always dominated these countries, you know, with regards to financial, you know, management and all that, and they decide what should be and what shouldn't be. You know, this is why, you know, these countries are revolting. Actually, that's a word, revolting.
But they would say to you, I have to refer back to that interview with President Traoré. Mm-hmm. He said, this is not about anger. This is about the fact that, like we said earlier, they feel disrespected by ECOWAS, number one. Number two, they don't feel ECOWAS supported them. Number three is French. The way the French were managing...
That is where...
And he said something about their economy. He said, we now have control over our
that
economy.
That is why. But you see,
we have control over how we work with international
countries. Where I will disagree
countries.
With her is the fact that, you say ECOWAS disrespected them.
Mm.
For the, they were part of those who actually endorsed the protocol. The zero tolerance. They were all part of it. So you don't expect ECOWAS to go against their convention or the treaty or the protocol that is signed.
Okay.
You know, so I think it's something that they have to look at inward, you know, and see how they can, how we can generally, ECOWAS, now the community now could find solutions, you know, to the problems, you know. And you see, they cannot take their anger, you know, against ECOWAS, you know. You see, right now, we need to sit and discuss. We need to negotiate. We need to talk, you know, and see where to remedy these problems and how to bring them back in. You see, just like you having a family, you know, some children, now two or three.
They just become prodigal.
And you know, it's wrong. It's something indeed. That, I'm not saying what they have done is wrong. It's something that is not, you know, not nice. We need to begin to talk to them. You see, we feel their pains. Because we all are in the same shoes, you know. Yeah. But you see, there must be a solution.
Okay.
It's not the fact that he's saying that it is not anger, but it's frustration.
Well, yeah,
yes,
I guess you're right. Yes,
in a way.
Yes. Indeed. So here's the thing. One of the things, I have a question here, which is a very good question. How much in Naira will it cost Nigeria to renegotiate three member states to come back? What do we stand to gain or lose? But the other, I would extend that by saying, one of the things that ECOWAS does is to monitor transition handovers from military to democracy. These countries, most important, well, Burkina Faso, certainly, I said, look, they plan to hand over in 3 years, right? Who is going to monitor that if they're not in ECOWAS? How is ECOWAS going to ensure that? And I'll read some things to you. And these are quotes from people in Niger, in Burkina Faso. One of them said, we will no longer allow ourselves to be subjugated. The other one said, ECOWAS travel is of no use. ECOWAS is only in name only. ECOWAS is no longer necessary. You know, and all of that stuff. If they're not in ECOWAS, who's going to... Because the people, some people say, you know, they don't have the people's mandate. Their people are clearly happy with what's happened. Who's going to ensure that it goes back to democracy rule?
I was reading somewhere, you know.
Go ahead.
Somebody said, there is no time in history where a military putsch takes place, you know, in any nation that the people are not celebrating. You know, this has always been, you know, you see some... few citizens celebrating that the military has taken over. But you see, it's not something that we have to celebrate, you know, and be happy that we are moving away from democracy back to military regimes, you know. And aside that, you know, from listening to you are a bit conclusive about about the move, the three countries.
No.
Leaving
what,
ECOWAS.
I'm giving you what he said.
Yes,
I have no skin in it.
Anyway, in any case, I think it's not conclusive. Yes, they might have been, you know, frustrated out of ECOWAS. But that does not mean they can't come back. They can.
There's always space.
There's
to
always
make
space,
up.
And that is why ECOWAS is trying its best.
Like, is it? Like, is it really
they
trying?
They are doing a lot. Now, for instance, we have asked that we should send international public persons, you know, to go discuss with these groupings of countries that have left ECOWAS. You know, so negotiations should begin in earnest, you know, and look at what is their anger or what is their frustration with ECOWAS and how we can remedy this situation. For instance, we agreed that we ECOWAS gave them 1 year to hand over. You know, there's
a 1 year handover period.
But they are saying it's too short. For instance, Mali has actually extended its handing over date by another year. Mm. You know, and you see, these are areas that ECOWAS will begin to discuss with them. Now, irrespective of the fact that right now, in quote, even if they're not members of ECOWAS, does not mean that the region, countries within the region, are not interested in their progress.
What's going on. Right. So let me.
Because if there's conflict in any of these countries, it is bound to precipitate into other countries. And that is why Nigeria took the bull by its horn to establish ECOMOC, to create ECOMOC, to quell down the crisis in Liberia and Sierra Leone.
Oh, prof, you've got to come back. We've got so much to discuss. But let me end with this, because I have like literally 5 minutes left. How coups and corruption affect the slow pace of development in Africa? You see, that's what we seem to be seeing. Although, right now, those three countries will tell you we're independent, we're able to manage. In fact, Traoré said he has the money now to be able to buy equipment, because corruption was what was the problem before. Can coups fix that? Have coups brought us back, taken us back as a region to those ugly days?
I don't think coups or military regimes are the remedy to the pristine problems of Africa or the region itself. Because even in the 70s, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, when the military took over, one of the reasons given were corruptions, maladministration, mismanagement of public funds, and all that. But they even became worse.
Mm.
You know, they didn't do right, you know. And so if the military administrations had failed us prior to the advent of the third wave of democracy, so why are we resorting back to them? I think these are things we need to sit down, you know. We're in the 21st century. We can't be taken back.
Regressing.
You're regressing. And that is why I have argued that, you see, what we have today is Africa's progress of shame. Mm. That means from when we got independence, we have not moved from where we are. The same indicators, the same factors, the same indices that were problems of Africa right from the days of independence are the same problems we are having. Corruption, maladministration. We need leadership. We need governance. We need to put in place good leadership, good governance. Now, importantly, we need to focus on a new development agenda. We have to be strategic in our development. That means look at science and tech. Look at infrastructural development. Look at industrialization. You see, let me tell you, if the people are frustrated, they become aggressive.
Mm.
And like I stated in one of my articles, you see, if we don't remedy the situations in Africa, we'll start deteriorating into us. There will be a social revolution. And if social revolution failed, the next point will be military coups. But if that doesn't happen, the worst of them all is rebellion. And which is something that we have to avoid.
Thank you so much. Prof, give me one sentence. If you were sent to negotiate with them now, one sentence, if you were sent to negotiate with those three countries, what would you say to them? You have a minute.
I will tell them to come back, that we'll look into the crisis of the region as well as Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we cannot fight as independent countries right now. The developing world needs to come together. What we call collectivization. You know, collectivization means groupings of developing countries coming together and fighting for a cause that will be to their own benefit. This is what we need.
Prof, you've got to come back. As I said, you've got to come back. Associate Professor FMN Ubi, Director of Research and Studies, Nigerian Institute of International Affairs. Thank you for being on Borderlines.
Thank you very much for having
me. We have so much more to talk about. We have to get the family back together. Lagos, Nigeria, wherever you're listening from, that is the end of another edition of Borderlines, the only show that takes you beyond borders. See, we don't only just talk Israel and Palestine. We talk when we can find the smart guests to come and share that conversation with us. We bring them on. Thank you. Have a fabulous weekend. Bye-bye.